Hello there. We'd like to welcome you to the virtual kitchen table. We're Erin from Everlearning, Ashley from Ashley as Mama and Storytime Shelves, and myself, Hayley from Taking a Kinder Path. We're gathering for conversations about family life and home education, particularly unschooling, which is sometimes known as self-directed learning, or as I like to call it, natural learning. We'll be sharing our experiences and ideas, learning as we go. We hope you'll pull a chair up to the table and join us.
Welcome back to the virtual kitchen table. It is Erin here, and happy to be chatting with Ashley. Hi, Ashley.
Hello.
And Hayley. Hi, Hayley.
Hello.
We are back talking about rubbish parenting, which you may recall from, I think it was two episodes ago. There's a little bit of a gap between these two conversations, but we initially were talking about a post that you'd written, Hayley, about feeling like a rubbish parent. And we just talked about, I think, that commonality. And I think that post was around like things to remember, things for us to keep in mind when we find ourselves in a place that we are not feeling very good about how parenting's going. And then you followed that post up with like actionable steps. So this is great. This is another post about rubbish parenting. This one's called What to Do When You Feel Like a Rubbish Parent, 13 Steps to Dealing with Parenting Doubt. So I would recommend that anybody who's listening to this one, I mean, you don't have to listen to both, but it might be a good starting point to go back and listen to the initial post about kind of those common feelings that we often have as parents and some things to remember. And then, yeah, now we're starting with some thoughts of what to do. And which I think is really helpful, Hayley, because, you know, sometimes even if we can't find the right thing to start with, just knowing that we're doing something can be helpful. So, yeah, so I'm excited to kind of dig into this a little bit. Is there anything else to think about before we kind of dive into the first idea that you offered?
Well, I guess the first thing I want to say is I actually read this post again this morning and realised there were a lot of broken links in there. So I apologise for that. And I'm going to actually look at it again and try and tidy all that up. But it reminded me the first kind of section before I go into the actions, I actually say, which I know I said at the end of the last blog post as well, that it seems a little harsh. What I said at the end of the last blog post and what we were talking about at the end of the podcast that we did on that first post was about the fact that we need to move on from that kind of feeling rubbish, that we don't want to dwell there. And I just think maybe the wording that I used seemed a little harsh, but I think the sentiment, like I say in this blog post, is hopefully a really positive one, because what I don't want is for us to get for any of us, you know, to get lost in that kind of feeling badness. What we really want is to be able, like you said, Erin, to take some action, I guess, and make ourselves feel a little bit better. Because once we start feeling a little bit better, then we tend to be able to have more space for other people and more compassion for other people and more, you know, if we can be kinder to ourselves, then generally we can be a little bit kinder to everyone else as well, can't we? So I think that's really, hopefully it's a helpful thing. It's not meant to be a kind of right. I don't know. It's not meant to be having a go at anybody. It was a bit of a pep talk for myself, basically, which is what I said last time, was it was about I was feeling very much like a rubbish parent, I think, at the time when I wrote the blog post. And, you know, I feel like that, you know, a lot of the time, you know, it's something that comes and goes, isn't it, for all of us to varying degrees. And I guess what I wanted with this post was to try and give people, yeah, some options for. It's not that we have to do all of the things that are in this blog post, but hopefully some of them will resonate with people, and they'll feel like that, like you say, there's just a starting point maybe for something we can do to start making ourselves feel a little bit better. Hopefully, yeah. That's what the intention was.
Well, Ashley, or sorry, Haley, I think you have, like, I seem to remember other conversations we've had when we've talked about, you offer ideas often in the form of a list, often with links to kind of follow up on. But I think before we, and I can't remember what episodes they would have been, but what's come up is the idea of a menu. So it's not the feeling I get when I read this post and others of yours is it's not, necessarily a how-to, or this is what you have to do. It's like, here's a menu of possibilities. And I mean, and yeah, sometimes we get into these sort of difficult emotional places, and sometimes we do need to sit there for a little while and just kind of feel what we're feeling or kind of let those things come up. But yeah, at some point we want to usually want to move ahead. So I feel like it's really helpful to have some ideas to, and even if, you know, even if one person's idea isn't a fit for us, it just kind of gets us thinking. It gets us generating ideas. And I think you've written here before you kind of give your ideas. Let me just look here. Yeah, I think you say each time we face those doubts, we get the chance to grow a little stronger and closer to our families than ever before. So I think it's, I love the positive spin as well, that we're kind of proactively trying to think through some ideas so we don't stay stuck. Ashley, anything from you before we get to
No,
the
I've been listening. I know I'm looking away from you guys. Not that anyone else who's listening can see that, but I, as you're talking, and this didn't, it just hit me as you guys were sharing now that I recently read a picture book with my youngest, and it was kind of all about what we're talking about. But this idea of, so I was just Googling that to try to remember who the author was and the illustrator. It's a really popular series. They've got lots of books. And I found the name of the book. It's called Who I Am, Words I Tell Myself. And it starts with this whole idea of how sometimes we feel down, discouraged, and we can, it kind of goes into, we can get stuck in those feelings, but the words we tell ourselves really matter and have an impact. And I think it even starts by saying, it's okay to feel like what you were just saying, Erin. It's okay to feel because we're human. So, you know, feel your feelings, but then it talks about like how to move on. I can't remember all the different messages in it, but we've like my youngest and I have read it a couple times now because I mean, probably it's good for me to hear. I know that. But I'm hoping that you know, he's very open to listening to those types of books where I know that that's not, you know, my oldest doesn't really enjoy those types of books, but it's really a lot about what we're talking about and this idea of like it's okay to have those feelings and like those hard feelings that don't feel good. So it's not about ignoring them, but it's also, you know, don't get stuck in them and different ideas of how to move on. I think it's pretty practical in the book too. So that just came to mind while you guys were both sharing.
Okay. Oh, that, well, we'll put that in the resource list. We'll link that.
Sure.
I'd love
I'll
to.
send you that. Yeah.
Okay. Okay. So, Haley, I was chuckling a little bit because we're just getting started and your first idea is hit the brakes. So I'll just read a little bit of what you put here and we can kind of see what comes up. So you say, let's just slow down for a minute. One thing I neglected to mention in my previous post was the speed at which our negative thoughts, in this case, our parenting doubts, can grow. Like rats, doubt breeds at alarming rates, especially if we're prone to pessimism, and we all are. So, to stop our doubts from spiraling out of control, we need damage limitation. Let your doubt know you're onto it and call a halt. Okay, so the way that I interpret that. For me, I'm sure it's different for everybody. I would picture that for myself, like those moments of self-talk where you literally you can almost feel yourself spiraling, and sometimes you literally have to give yourself some sort of verbal message like, okay, let's slow down. And then I think physically it can be, you know, taking a deep breath, taking that space. But when I read that, Haley, I picture it as a very like clear message that we send to ourselves, that we remind ourselves, like, okay, let's just stop or slow down for a minute and take stock of the situation.
Yeah, we don't want to keep, sometimes we just need that. We need that, don't we, to sort of remind ourselves that we're spiraling a bit.
Yeah.
And we're all, you know, we can all do that, can't we? We can all do that about all sorts of things. So, I think you described it beautifully, Erin. Thank you.
Yeah, no problem.
Yeah, I really like how, to me, this one made a lot of sense. And I think back to how I wish, I think I say this too often, maybe, but I wish I kind of had this idea, or someone had sparked this idea for me earlier on in my parenting, because I've even been wondering lately, has it become a bad habit? Like, would, if I had to slow down and put the brakes on in my earlier parenting years, would I have, I mean, I would have had more practice at doing that, I guess, right? Where it's only been, I mean, I guess it's been quite a few years now where I've really been practicing slowing down and putting on the brakes. But it's what you said, Erin, like, that's what it is for me as well. Like, it's almost just realizing the value in being aware that that's going on can make a really big difference. And then practice, like, what that actually looks like for me sometimes, of course, depending on the situation. And now that mine are older, like, I have the option to walk away, like, to remove myself from whatever it is that might be getting my thoughts going. So just walking away sometimes to give myself space and time. I'm going to say distract myself. I use that sometimes. And I say that not to say, like, to ignore my feelings or thoughts, but almost making that conscious choice to not let myself spiral and say, okay, I'm not doing that right now, because I'm not feeling calm enough, or I've been doing that too much lately, or that's not going to be helpful right in this moment. So I'm going to get busy doing something else, and I'll return to this later if needed. And then the other thing that comes to mind with this one that I've noticed for a real long time for myself, and I think I realize that this probably isn't true for everyone. Lots of times I go to bed at night. Well, this part might be true for a lot of parents. Lots of times they go to bed at night and feel like a rubbish parent. I think I mentioned that in the last episode. Typically, okay, so sometimes in the morning I wake up and can still feel like a rubbish parent, but it's always less, right? Like, it's always a little bit better. It doesn't feel as bad. It makes me think of that, is it like marriage advice, where people would often say, like, don't go to bed mad. So sometimes I think, like, just stop the thoughts about how bad of a parent you are, or how horrible of a job you did that day. Just, if you can, shut them off, go to sleep. It won't feel quite as bad in the morning, rather than staying up trying to think about what I should have done better or whatnot, right? So mm-hmm. It's just, yeah, the slowing down, I think, giving ourselves that space and time, because, yeah, what good is it to spiral? Mm-hmm. And just feel worse.
When you say that, it's reminding me of, like, I don't know, I might have to think about this longer. So I don't know, but it makes me think about, like, compartmentalizing. I can't remember what you said, something about, I think it was my image. I kind of picture putting something in a box for a period of time. And sometimes I get a little bit annoyed with some of those ideas, because I think, well, you know, sometimes things sound a bit easier than they actually are. But I do find that, and this thing with sleep is interesting, because it's interesting how our systems can also, we can trust our systems at times to do some of this work for us or protect us. Like, I've had times where I've gotten up in the morning, and I sometimes have, you know, different things happening with people in my life that can be quite, you know, their lives can be in a difficult space, and it can feel very hard at times. And there have been times where I've gotten up in the morning and I've gone to, like, attend to something, and something will hit me. I'm like, oh, I need to get this done by 9:30, and it can be something quite important for somebody. And then I'll think, wow, it's amazing that I just went right to sleep last night. And I didn't even, and I think about how stressed out I would have been if I had been thinking about, I'm not sure I'm describing this very well, but suddenly in the middle of my morning, I'll realize how big something is. And I'll be thankful that somehow I was so tired the night before that I just slept very well. And then it kind of like, it's almost like it reappeared in my mental inbox in the morning. But it's not that I didn't know that was happening the night before, but there's just a point that your system says enough. Am I making, I don't, I'm thinking as I go here, so maybe I'll come back with this. But on the one hand, I think we're talking about, when we talk about hit the brakes, and what was this one? This one was talking about, well, I think, yeah, hitting the brakes. And I think we're about to talk about staying in the present moment. On the one hand, we're being intentional. And so we do have that opportunity to be able to give ourselves messages. And we do have lots of control over how we feel about things. And also we have, to me, it's like a backup system where our own self will, we do have these coping mechanisms, I think, where we just, our systems just go, you know what? You need to sleep. And we just do. Yeah. So anyway, that's just kind of what that brought up to me, Ashley, is how interesting that is when things like that happen. But
yeah. I think that feels really, I think that feels really reassuring as well, doesn't it? I think it is true that sometimes we get to the point, yeah, where we can't do anything more and we can't think anything more. And we just, like you say, our bodies just think, right, just sleep. And then tomorrow you'll deal with this. And that's, that's a good thing, I think, isn't it? Sometimes it's what we need.
Yeah, I think so too. And it feels like, I mean, I always like thinking of options. So it feels like we have two kind of, you know, we can have choice and intention. And also sometimes we can rest from having to make those decisions and kind of let our brain rest and do what it needs to do. So, okay. So kind of, I guess kind of related to this, the next point is get back to the present moment. So I won't read through the whole thing, but I can read a chunk of it here just to give us a bit of a starting point. So it says, many of our worries about parenting arise when we're obsessing over the past or projecting into the future, preoccupied by failure or future-proofing, we miss out on the moment. And this moment is all we have. Here's where we live our lives and build our relationships. Life is a series of moments. Moments we can learn from, moments we get to leave behind, and moments we can choose to embrace. Slowing down our frantic thoughts allows us to take full advantage of each precious moment. I am going to read the whole thing, actually. It's not as long as I thought. In practice, this might look like a grounding exercise such as the five senses, paying attention to our immediate environment, noticing five things we can see, four we can hear, three we can feel, two we can smell, and one we can taste. And then Haley, you list some additional, like there's a link to some additional exercises and ideas. So I love this. I love how you broke that down in such concrete ways, Haley, especially around the sensory pieces, because I think, yeah, what better way to feel present than to really take advantage of the actual physical sensory in the moment. So I love that one so much. Where to kind of start with it. Except that, you know, this is very interesting that I guess maybe the preoccupied by failure can be an interesting one, especially if, and I think we talked about this last time, often I think those intense moments of feeling like a rubbish parent can be after an incident. I don't know if that's the case for everybody else, but I know we often have threads kind of weaving through where we wonder if maybe, oh, should we have done this a bit differently? Should I have introduced this? Should I not have introduced this? But I think those intense moments of just feeling like just, you know, utter garbage in the moment, basically, like those raw feelings are often after like a a bit of a situation. I don't know if it's just me, but so I
think it's not those, just you.
It's not just me. Those are the moments where it's like the opportunity to have a really tangible list can be really helpful to remind, I think.
Yeah, well, I did. My intention with this post was for every section now on, there is a little bit like that that says, in practice, this might look like I love the way you described it as a menu. And there may be nothing on this menu that appeals to you, or maybe that, you know, hopefully there will be something that at least, sparks something in you that is helpful. But I think I quite like the bit about thinking about the present moment. I think that's really tough sometimes to try and be in the present moment, because it is so natural, I think, for us to think about what's happened in the past and to worry about what's going to happen in the future. That's kind of, we spend a lot of our time, I think, in those two extremities, don't we? But I kind of like reading back the bit that I wrote about, that I write about, the moments, life is a series of moments. Mm. I kind of like the reminder, I think, for myself anyway, that we do get a choice about which of those moments we get to leave behind, which of those moments we get to sort of fully embrace and kind of big up, if you like, in our minds, you know, really make the most of them, I guess. Yeah, you know, really nice moments. We can, you know, we can choose to put those in big focus and let the other things kind of drift away a bit, and you know, and which moments we decide that we're gonna learn from, I think is really, it's nice that, yeah, we do get a choice. And sometimes we don't remember that we get a choice. We kind of not, and also remembering that for everybody, what we take from any moment is going to be different to those around us. So our children, there'll be times definitely where for our children, they've hardly noticed whatever it is we're obsessing about. You know, we might have said something and think, why did I say that? That was disrespectful, or that was just silly, or I've, you know, now I'm making them worry about something that they didn't even need to worry about, you know. Well, and often those things get, you know, those things aren't on their agenda. They're not big things that they've noticed. And of course, the other thing is true, that sometimes we don't realize what a big impact we've had, and we can say things sometimes and walk away, and then maybe later our child might say to us, oh, you know, when you said that really made me think about something, or that really upset me a bit, or whatever. And then obviously we get an opportunity to deal with that, I guess, don't we? If I guess this is coming back to the thing that we're always talking about on this podcast, is about having that strong connection and relationship, and you hope that if you have that, then at least you've got more opportunities, I guess, to repair, haven't you? Because hopefully you've got that strong relationship where your children are able to come to you and say, I really didn't like what you said to me, or I really felt uncomfortable with what you said to me. And you get a chance then to repair, or to explain yourself, or whatever's appropriate in that moment. Mm-hmm. I've rambled on a bit there, I think. Hopefully that all makes sense.
It does, actually. That makes a lot of sense. And the piece about connection there, I think, makes a lot of sense to touch on here, because what better way to stay connected if we're staying in the present moment, right? Like if we're up in our heads thinking about the past or the future and all the worries and stresses, we're not as connected with our children. So, I think everything you said made, excuse me, a lot of sense, Haley. I was thinking about two different things, like how I practically handle those situations. I find that if I'm doing the worrying about the past or projecting into the future and kind of having those, like, you know, those worries that aren't going anywhere anytime soon, I guess, I can get back into the present moment. And I do this pretty regularly, because of course we worry about stuff as parents pretty often. I just think to myself how much I already miss my kids when they were younger, and how I'm going to now miss this stage not too long. And I just get right back into the moment with them, because everyone says it, right? They grow up so fast. And you're not going to get these moments back. You're not going to get these days back. And for me, that's what gets, for my husband, we've had conversations about this because he often feels he's not in the present moment. That's, he understands that. And it's not that he doesn't feel that way as well, but it's not enough to get him back in the moment. So for him, I think it is more of like the sensory example of, you know, physically, what am I hearing? What am I seeing? What am I smelling? For him, whereas for me, I use that strategy after what you talked about, Erin, after there's been an incident, as you put it, you know, a really rough moment or something, or yeah, like what you said, Haley, maybe I said something that I really wish I hadn't have said. And I'm feeling a lot of guilt about, yeah, worrying about something that's just recently happened. The other thing of thinking about how they're only this age for so long can help too, but it's just, it is a pretty different experience, I think. And that's when, for me, I use that sensory thing. Like, it's more about getting back into my body, I think, and using my senses to help me do that. I had another thought, but it's escaped me. So,
well, something I just wanted to add too, when we're thinking about this idea of getting back to the present moment, is kind of being intentional about the messages we take in, and so if I want to think about specifically about home educating, for example, and other people projecting whether kids are going to be able to do A, B, or C, or maybe going back and potentially making suggestions that we could have done things differently, or that, you know, I just think that it's really helpful to have some of these pieces in mind around that too, that we can choose, you know, we can choose to try to live more presently, but we often have other people pulling us out of that, either projecting stuff into the future or reminding us of the past. And so, yeah, when we kind of find those tools that, that help remind us of what we're choosing and how we're choosing to look at the present moment. We have control over that. We can be quite intentional about that. And I even think, like, I often think about sitting, having this conversation here. I feel the same way if we do our Zoom conversations in the community. It's like, I'm often kind of leading up to the time. It's in the back of my mind and I'm thinking, okay, oh, how many minutes do I have still? Do I have time to do this? Should I grab this? You know, I'm in the moment, but I'm preparing to be on time for something or whatever. And I think having these kinds of opportunities to just really sit and have concentrated conversations, like, I always feel so in the moment when we have these and we finish the conversations and it's like, time just moves a little bit differently. I don't know if it's faster or slower, but it just feels so, authentic. It feels like I've really experienced, you know, I mean, our episodes are quite long, so really experienced the last 2 hours. And I can think of times with my kids that way too, where actually my daughter just remarked about that the other day. We were, practicing like highway driving or I guess freeway driving. And it just felt like the time was different. We were so focused and concentrated. We were just fully present. And what I find is I'm also sometimes a bit tired after being fully present, because I think we live so much of our lives kind of here and there and thinking ahead to, are we going to be late for this? And should we have done that? And when we have that period of time where, we just are really, really in the moment, for me at least, I've been noticing lately. I can feel unexpectedly tired afterward. And I think, oh yeah, I was putting, in a good way, I was putting so much focus into this. Maybe the world would have fewer sleep problems if we were all living more presently. Who knows? Just a theory popping up, but...
I really like that, Erin. I just wanted to add that you just made me think how maybe that's another, yeah, practical idea, because I can relate to what you're saying. And it, you know, when you hear others talk about the importance of finding like mutually enjoyable activities with your kids, I know I heard it a lot more when my kids were younger, and you'd hear parents say, my kids are always wanting to play these you know, imaginative games, and it's so hard for me to really enjoy it. And you'd start, I started hearing advice like, it's okay to not enjoy that type of play. And, you know, it's not to say don't engage with them with that type of play, but it's important to find something that both, that you both enjoy. And of course, if you're both enjoying something, like when I was sitting down trying to force myself to play the imaginative games, when I really wasn't in the mood or it wasn't my type of play, that's when I really had to work hard to be in the present moment. But like what you were describing there, the way I heard it anyway, was if you're both, and it doesn't even necessarily need to be something really fun. It could just be something that you're both really focused on. Of course, you're going to be in the more present moment. So just while you were sharing that, I thought, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And to me, that sounds like a very practical, another practical idea to stay in the present moment. If you really engage in activities with your kids, that they're really getting something out of it, but you are as well. I hope that made sense. Okay.
Yeah, no, it did. It's giving me more to think about. It's good. Okay. Oh, this is a lovely one. Be grateful. Despite our best efforts, those parenting doubts might still be cycling through our minds at a rate of knots. Mindfulness is a practice and requires repeated effort, but the more we give it a go, the more likely we'll feel the benefits. The same is true for gratitude. Being grateful doesn't always come easy, but we can build those gratitude muscles with daily practice. Even in the midst of our worst doubting moments, we can be grateful for the messages doubt brings us. Grateful for the nod, all is not well. The reminder not to keep blundering on, making the same old mistakes. If we're willing, our doubt can be an opportunity to reflect on why we're feeling so rubbish and make it better. Oh, Haley, there's so much good. I'm always like, how much do I read here? Okay, I'm going to continue on a little bit more. And while we're on the subject of gratitude, taking stock of what's going well in our lives and looking for what we appreciate helps us shift from despair and raises our energy and enthusiasm to face our doubts full on. And then again, you give a says in practice, this might look like actively noticing the positive and listing five things we're grateful for, starting a gratitude journal and using it daily, repeating affirmations or chanting mantras, mighty powerful tools to jolly along the mind and help us move in a more peaceful direction. Okay. Okay, so lots of good stuff packed in there. I don't even know where to start. So I do think gratitude requires, I shouldn't say it requires. I think it's helpful to practice gratitude, particularly maybe for certain people. I think you know, some of us do have more of a tendency toward glass half full, and others, I mean, we both can slide to either direction, but I think particularly for some people, it can be helpful to get into a practice. And I'm curious for people, like we talked about this in our list episode, how I was, you know, I loved that episode we did talking about lists, and I was trying to figure out like where did I fit in there, because I don't feel like a list person. And I'm also not a journaler, which is interesting because I do so much writing, but I write if something grabs my mind, I write about it. So to set that as a daily intention would feel, I don't know, like I'm following somebody's orders or something. So for me, I don't find that that's, but I do think that I practice gratitude. And for me, it's like, it's a reminder in both really joyful moments and really difficult moments. It's like, you know, where's the learning or where's the fun? Or sometimes just something humorous. I mean, there's that saying about if I don't laugh, I'll cry. And not that we want to be pushing down all our emotions, but I think there is a place for that. There is a place for, yeah, deciding which way we're going to see a situation, or whether that's a big life situation or whether that's sitting in a crowded room being super hot and trying to pull out what could be the positive, you know, in this moment. So I do think I have found ways to be intentional. But I have never found some of the things that other people suggest aren't always a fit for me. So I think, again, it's like we're all going to be so different as far as what we find helpful with that.
And I think it's, I'm not a journaler either. And, but I think I do often do the kind of listing five things we're grateful for. But I tend to do that in my head. I don't tend to write it down. That'll be something that I just think, oh, right, you know, focus the mind, think about what you're grateful for. And it just reminded me as well, this little bit about, we've had these conversations in our family before about how things are either kind of good or okay, or they're a story. There are lots of things, lots of examples, but lots of embarrassing examples probably. But I can think of just a really silly little one that happened the other day. And I answered the phone all confident, sure that it was somebody on the end of the line, and it was somebody completely different. So there I was saying their name, really confident. Oh, hi, you know, so-and-so. And they were like, no, it's not so-and-so. And it was fine. It wasn't a big deal. But even as it was sort of happening, I kind of in my mind thought, it's not, you know, it's not a really big thing. It's just a story. And there have been worse embarrassing things than that have happened to me that I have managed to think to myself, right, when I get home, I can kind of tell the family this silly little thing that happened to me. And it won't have as much power then, because it's like if you trip in the street and you laugh, that kind of has less, you know, it's better, isn't it? Sometimes you feel better, don't you, sometimes, than if you're trying to maintain this, I don't know, sophisticated air or something. Not that I ever have a sophisticated air when I'm walking down the street, but you kind of know what I mean. If you can laugh at yourself, it just makes it less embarrassing, I think, doesn't it? I think then people are laughing with you rather than laughing at you, type thing. And I love that idea. And I know that my children have done that as well. They've, you know, in fact, it was one of them that came up with the idea, I'm sure, and said, you know, they came home with a story that had happened to them. And I think that's just a really nice way of thinking about things, because then you can never, you know, then everything's fine, isn't it? Because it's either okay or it's a story. Great.
I love that. That is, it's so funny. I was just, I was commenting on, Anne from Oh By The By we've talked to her before about science, and she and her son have started an online bird. It's a website that the intention is for it to be like an online birding community. So she's invited people to join with birding ideas. And anyway, I was responding to one of her son's posts last night, and I was telling a story, Haley, and it was the thing that triggered the conversation. He was talking about Atlantic puffins. And so, you know, we had been in Newfoundland on a whale watching boat and had hundreds of puffins above us, which was wonderful. And then my daughter, I can't remember how old she would have been at the time, probably less than 10 or maybe around 10, ended up with a large amount of puffin dropping in her ear. One just flew over. And anyway, it kind of completely changed the experience. But it gave us an awful lot to laugh about, because it's the only time we've seen puffins, and this is kind of now our connection. But then also, I find if we dig into that a little bit, there's often like a story attached to the story. So then there's a story of reporting this back to my husband, to her dad, who's, you know, already a little wary of outdoor adventures, and then very protective of her. So then that became a funny story, if you know his personality and his reaction to it. And so it just, for me, it's like it just creates like an energy of fun and joy about life that so often, and I think we've talked about this actually, having an episode about stories and the different ways we can look at the same situation. And so, you know, I look at pictures of that day, which aren't very good because it was ridiculously windy. We were, you know, hanging onto the railings. We have this situation happening with the puffins. And yet it's also a very positive memory because, well, it very much, you know, it's something that's very planted in our memory. So we were very present in the moment. And yeah, anyway, Haley, I love that. And it's such a simple sentence, right? Things are either okay or they're a story. I love that.
Yeah, I wrote it down. It's obviously not a completely new concept to me, but as you were talking about this, both of you, I had a light bulb moment went off. I was like, this is something we need in our family that I mean, maybe we do it, but I don't think we do it in this way. And I really think it's a helpful, I'm going to call it a strategy, because I think I don't think I'm always good at doing that. And I would like to practice that myself for myself, but also to model it for my kids, because yeah, you're right. And there's so many situations that often come up all throughout life where, yeah, you can take it off as a story. And I love the idea of, you know, what you can do with an experience when you share it with someone else. So anyway, I jotted that down. I'm going to report back to you guys and let you know. I don't want to forget that. I'll have to really think about how I'm going to do that, because I don't think I naturally do that. And I'm even thinking as I'm talking back to my family, like back to my childhood and my sisters, it's probably worth having a conversation with them to see if they remember us doing that as a family, or if that's kind of new for them too. Because I see that as a lot of value. And of course, I'm thinking about my own kids. And I think my eldest in particular could really benefit from that idea, just thinking of things in that way and starting to try to do that, where, you know, you have, especially like an embarrassing moment or an uncomfortable moment, and deciding what to do with it, like making that conscious choice to be like, how do I want to leave that moment? How do I want to feel about that moment? And and what are my options? Like you said, Erin, it's nice to feel like there's options. And one option is, well, you've got a story to tell or a story to share. Yeah, I really appreciate you guys talking about that. The one thing I was going to share around gratefulness that we do pretty often and we've done for years now, it's just a little simple thing. Because I've done like what you described, Haley, where in your mind you just think about five things you're grateful for. Years ago, like in my 20s, I did have a period of time where I would jot it down. I'd get into bed and I had a little notepad, and I would just very quickly list the five things. And maybe because I did that, it just moved into my mind. But it kind of like, I've never forgot. I don't consistently always do it, but fairly often I'll just think, what are at least three to, you know, five things that I'm grateful for today? And I have found that really helpful. And then with the kids, what I do, not every night, sometimes it's not at nighttime, sometimes it's during the day, but often before bed, we'll do the little activity of like two things you liked about the day and something you didn't like about the day. Which is obviously different ways. I think we've even said that, like put that in different ways. But to really try to highlight, I mean, for one, it lets you reflect back on your day and kind of take time to reflect on that, and highlight a couple things that you were really grateful for that happened that day, or experiences that you had. But then to also acknowledge that there's probably some things in every day that you're maybe not grateful for, and that's okay too. And I mean, I like doing that with them because it lets me in, with where they're thinking about their day or what they're thinking about their day and how they're feeling about their day, what kind of comes up for them. Sometimes I'm surprised with what they say, but we've done it for a long time. And like I said, it's not every day, but I would say it's a fairly common practice. And I'm hoping that it, just allows them to see like the, because I don't really, I mean, we've talked about gratitude for sure, but for me, it's a little bit more about like just putting those little practices in our day so that that's just kind of a normal thing to do, I guess. Like that's just something people do. And hopefully that benefits them. Throughout their life, depending on how they do it, it can take so many forms, but I like that one because it's quick and it's easy enough to do, and you don't need anything to do it. You can do it. The other day, yesterday, my youngest and I did it, on the car ride home. So that's what came to mind when we're talking about, gratitude.
Yeah. Car rides are great that stuff. They just build in that time. Mm-hmm. And I think, can we be grateful for, sometimes these kind of really challenging rubbish parent moments happen maybe because of a difference in personality or perspective between us and our child, or maybe, I think a lot of people that come into home education, they have a child who maybe has a fairly intense personality and is a free thinker and is going to kind of do their own thing and go their own way. And so some of the things that happen that give us these moments of feeling like we don't really know what we're doing, or maybe we haven't really done a great job in a particular situation, those very kind of personality characteristics, whether they're ours or whether they're our child's or a combination of the two, often lead us down a particular path. You know, if my eldest had been a really calm baby, I don't know whether I probably would have gotten here, but that I started reading because I wanted to understand more about a baby that might be higher needs, a baby that wasn't sleeping, and so, I think we can also be grateful. It's almost like one and the same. The very things that can lead us to those really intense moments are also the catalyst for our own learning and really kind of understanding a whole different way of looking at things and a whole different way of living and parenting. Okay, so the next one here is notice the messages. We are feeling beings. We are feeling beings. It's easier to read than to say. Receiving feedback from our environment and relationships constantly. And that feedback is mighty useful in keeping us safe and alerting us to danger. Noticing our feelings and considering the messages within them is a sensible strategy for survival. There's a quote here from the Lulastic, which is Lucy, right? Lucy Aitken. Yeah. There's a quote here. Everything that makes an impression must have expression. Okay, so that's going to be an interesting one for me to think about. So in practice, this might look like journaling our thoughts, or a simple spiritual practice you can do with your phone. And then you give a great idea here, Haley, or phoning a friend. So this is an interesting thought. So notice the messages. It kind of reminds me a little bit about what I said about being present and noticing kind of what, noticing the messages, what we're taking in from other people's perspectives and opinions at times about what we should be doing.
It's interesting this. I don't know whether this would be relevant for everyone, but it kind of reminds me of the, I think you did a blog post, Erin, didn't you, on external processes and internal processes?
Yeah.
And I'm definitely an external processor. So for me, I've already said I'm not much of a journaler, but I'm definitely a talker. So I often talk things out. And I guess, phoning a friend or having a conversation with somebody in the family, that's often what I do to process whatever's happening to me. But I guess if you're more of an internal processor, maybe you wouldn't do it quite the same way. I'm not really sure. It just reminded me of that blog post you did as I was thinking about it.
Yeah, that's an interesting, I would have said I'm an internal processor. I know it seems like I'm not because I'm talking on a podcast and I write, but I think the bulk of what I think outside of writing, I'm an internal processor, but I am starting to realize that when I get writing things is actually when I start to kind of think it through and it starts to come through. So maybe there's different ways of thinking about internal and external processing. But yeah, that's an interesting connection, Haley.
And I guess we can process things without words, which I guess is the next section in the blog post. You don't have to articulate things necessarily for them to be processed and for you to let go of them.
Well, and there's something too, like if I'm, so you're saying we're feeling beings receiving feedback from our environment and relationships constantly, which can be overstimulating. That's what's coming to my mind. That's true. And can be overstimulating. And then you're saying noticing our feelings and considering the messages within them. So I'm thinking like, and maybe this is kind of a little bit about, I think I mentioned at the beginning, as great, it's wonderful to have some strategies or some ideas to concretely move forward. Before we do that, sometimes it can just be really helpful to sit for a moment and figure out, what am I even feeling? And where is this coming from? I think especially if we're in a difficult moment with our child right then, you know, I find I'm way, way quicker than I used to be at being able to go, wait, what am I feeling here? Like something's bubbling, you know, in the pit of my stomach, or my thoughts are racing. What is it that's happening here? And it just allows for that pause before reacting or, you know, because I think sometimes, like for me, I struggle if things seem illogical. So if I'm in a struggle with somebody, whether it's my child or anybody else, and I feel what they're saying is illogical, my brain goes to, well, that doesn't make sense, and let me show you why you're wrong. right? Like that's what, you know, and even though these are sometimes little beings that we're talking about, we're still human too. So if we feel that we're not being heard or understood, or we feel attacked in some way, we do still have those primitive, like, no, that's not fair. That's not what I meant. That's not what I said. You're wrong. And I think that maturing as a parent, for me, has had a lot to do with just taking the pause and being like, hey, where is this coming from? Not about who's right or wrong. What's happening for me right now that I have such a need to prove that what they're saying doesn't make sense, or what they're doing doesn't make sense, or isn't consistent, or whatever. So again, I'm kind of going round and round, but I think what comes up for me in understanding those feelings is when we realize that about ourselves and we're conscious of it, it kind of gives us another reason to take that pause. Because it's funny, when we've been having this conversation today and the past one, the rubbish parent thing, I keep picturing myself after a difficult moment. But also, we can be feeling that about ourselves in the moment. And sometimes when we're feeling guilty, we almost, I'm speaking for myself, but I have seen other people do this. It's almost like in order to make ourselves feel less guilty, we almost up it more, like to really prove that we're right for being angry. At least that's something I've noticed in myself that I have to kind of really watch. And I feel like I've seen other people, parents do that too. It's like, they're already feeling cruddy, but they kind of haven't named it yet. And so then in order to soothe that guilt, maybe they bring on even more. Am I making sense?
Okay. Yeah, you're making a lot of sense. It's making me think about how you're describing what I do. And I start processing it externally in the moment more so, where I'll hear myself explaining. It'll seem like I'm explaining it to the kids or one of the kids, you know, whoever I'm in the moment with. But I'm more so talking to myself in the moment, kind of explaining my, you know, because I think lots of times as parents, you get to this point where you learn something in theory and you can look back at a moment and be go, I see what happened there. I understand now what was going on. But the more you, I don't know, for myself, I become aware of it now in the moment and I'll start naming it out loud and describing it. And again, it would probably seem like I think it's probably still helpful for my kiddo to hear, although it could be a little bit confusing, I guess, too. But it's more so for myself. And then I find it really helpful when I do that, because I'm able to get to an understanding faster or more of an understanding of where those feelings were coming from, that when things calm down and I go back to the kiddo to reconnect, to apologize, or to just even like talk about what happened, I've been able to make like more sense of it faster, certainly faster than I used to be.
I want to say something about that, Ashley, in relation to unschooling for a minute, or maybe in the younger years, maybe like attachment parenting, because I think that I hear this a lot and I read this a lot, and I've certainly experienced it, where we find sort of a theory or an idea that we think could be interesting, or we might be doing it already, and now we're looking for a name for it, but we're still, it's because it's still out of the conventional box, it's a little bit harder to implement or kind of live that way, because I think there are always these doubts that come back and forth. And I've heard this a lot with people, like, let's say a screen time thing. Let's just use screen time or kind of technology as an example, where parents have been doing all this reading and listening to podcasts and talking to other parents, and they kind of have these ideas they want to implement, and they maybe quickly, I guess the wording that people often use is they take away controls, or they lift controls and they open things wide open. And then maybe there's an afternoon where, I don't know, things aren't going very well. Either the child is continuing to be on a screen longer than the parent's comfortable with, or maybe an argument breaks out between two kids over whatever. And parents go quickly. And when you're talking about this, like you're processing it externally, but it's probably a lot of internal stuff you've been working on, and all of a sudden it's coming out in the moment. And you can hear that. It's kind of like, well, you know, we thought we'd give this a try, but it's not working here, blah, 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 blah. But meanwhile, the kids don't even know that you've been doing all this research. Right. And so I find when I have a period of time that there's like a high amount of learning for me, that I'm trying to grasp a concept, I'm trying to picture what would it look like in practice for my own family, I'm often doing that without other people necessarily knowing how important it's become to me, or how in depth I've been thinking about it. And I think those can be moments then when things aren't going in the way that we heard they would, we can suddenly just start expressing that in a really inconsistent, I think it would feel inconsistent to kids. I think it feels up and down. And so, I mean, these conversations are about helping ourselves if we feel like a rubbish parent, but I don't think that we're taking away some responsibility we have for our actions either. So I guess I'm just looking at it from the kids' perspective right now, that I think that happens a lot. We make a change to our day. It could be screens, it could be any number of things, but then something's not feeling right. And all these other doubts, sometimes they're not even related, but they just get expressed. And that's maybe related to the thing I was talking about, where it's almost like we just keep going. And yeah, I don't know. And that it can just feel really, really not good. Okay. Anybody have anything else on that? Are we good to, oh, sorry. Go ahead, Haley.
No, I'm fine.
Okay. Okay. So this comes nicely into the next one. Keeping our emotions in flow. There's danger in lingering too long, dwelling on our doubts. Just as fresh water stagnates when it's still for too long, our emotions can get stuck if we don't keep them flowing. Ruminating on what's wrong can make it hard to think clearly. As a verbal processor, it pains me to say this, but healthy expression isn't all about talking it through. Sometimes when we search for the right words to convey what we're feeling, we just can't find them. Attempting to label and define complex thoughts can see us straying into the realms of oversimplifying or complicating matters way too much. Sometimes other forms of expression can be a whole heap healthier and happier all around. So Haley, you have here, in practice, this might look like a good cry. And I wonder, when you wrote this post, you have a great post about the benefits of crying. So I don't see that linked here, but I think we need to make sure we link that in the resources, because I love that post. So some other thoughts: moving our bodies by stretching, walking, dancing, whatever feels good. And for tons more creative ideas on expressing our emotions and generally taking good care of ourselves, you've offered another link. So we'll have a look at where things are at with that link too, Haley. All of the above can be done in a flash, much of it while you're snuggling your lovelies on the sofa, watching Ninjago or close by. And hopefully now you're starting to feel a bit better, or at least less desperate. That's a good point. And that's good, because we're about to ramp things up for the long term. Okay, so we've got more happening here. But I think your point about feeling less desperate, I think that's what so much of this is about. I feel like when we're parenting, we don't necessarily expect perfection, but it's that feeling of like desperation or incompetence, like just total incompetence, that can be really overwhelming. And as you said, Haley, you can get stuck there, can't you?
Yeah, and I think like you were just saying, sort of links to that thing about overcomplicating things. Sometimes mm-hmm. we can do that, can't we? We can go round in all kinds of circles, and yeah, sometimes it's just better, isn't it, to be quiet sometimes and think about how. Definitely for me, because that's a standing joke in our house, is, oh, she's still talking, because mm-hmm. you know, I will just, something will happen and I'll just keep over explaining things, and they just, you know, now that they're mostly adults, they just kind of laugh at me sometimes and know that I just need to get this out. It's not necessarily for them, it's for me. I need to just release something, and I guess I'm learning that there are other ways to really, I don't have to say things all the time. Sometimes I can just, yeah, go for a walk, or it's okay to cry. And I actually wrote The Benefits of a Good Cry after I wrote this one, which is where I noticed when I was going through it earlier, I was thinking, oh yeah, really, I should link that post. I think there's a few posts that I wrote afterwards that I thought, oh, actually they would sit really nicely in this post, but that's obviously what happens, isn't it? Everything links to everything else, and you can mm-hmm. often see that with a bit of hindsight. But yeah, I think crying is such, in that post I think I talk about how crying is so good, because it actually releases it releases stress hormones, so it physically has an impact on you. And I know it can feel horrible sometimes when you've had a cry, but other times it can feel a lot better, can't it? The just the act of crying can make you feel better, which is a kind of strange thing, really. Maybe there's a sweet spot about how long you cry for. I'm not sure, you know, because you don't want to get all headachey, and which sometimes happens, doesn't it? But yeah, I mean, hopefully, I think it's all been a lot of thought stuff so far. And I think when I talk about ramping it up for the long term, I think, well, I'm hoping anyway, that it kind of gets a bit more practical. This is kind of practical in that, you know, go for a walk, have a good cry. Those are practical things you can do. But I think so far we've been talking a lot about it at a thought level, haven't we? Which is a good place to be. There's value in being at the thought level, but there's also other actions we can take, aren't there? So hopefully I say something a bit more.
Oh yeah, yeah. There's lots. And I just want to say, before we move on from the thought end of things, is that even if we, you know, I was talking about kind of learning to take that pause, and maybe after the pause, we decide, yes, it's not going to be helpful for me to actually say anything much at all right now. We can still, like, hold that awareness that, like, I'm choosing not to, I don't feel like I have the words, or I don't feel like this is the time for the words right now, but I'm still feeling all this, whatever I'm feeling, this emotion, whether it's despair or anger or whatever, and I'm going to do something with that emotion. Like, so just holding it for the moment, but recognizing that, yeah, whether that's a call with a friend, whether that's going for, you know, a walk, whether it's journaling, just acknowledging that, okay, we're choosing not to verbalize this right now, because in this moment that might add too much stimulation. We might not have the words, but we're feeling strong emotion, and it's probably good to think about how we want to move through that, because otherwise I think that's when we do get those buildups, and then you have those moments where there's the straw that breaks the camel's back at some point. So I think for me, it's been developing the ability to pause and reflect on what is it I'm feeling, where's this coming from, but also I don't need to judge where it's coming from or what I'm feeling, but I do want to move that out at some point. It just might not be in this moment through conversation with my child. So Ashley, did you have anything before I move on to the next one? I just realized.
Yeah, thanks, Erin. I think I was just thinking how this is a really good reminder. I think I'm similar to Haley. I know I get a look on, my eldest kid gets a look on their face when I've been talking too much. and I think the older they get, that's just going to be a thing. And I'm learning to like, just talk less and share less. But it's a helpful reminder, because I think often, you know, what comes to mind with this one for me is we're often told when, you know, you want a healthy relationship and you're working on your relationships, that communication is so important. So I find myself often in the moment thinking, we need to talk about this, or I feel like we should have a conversation about this. And of course, a lot of times that is true and communication is important, but this is just as true, is that sometimes, I mean, I guess it's what you were saying, Erin, right? So like sometimes, it's better to wait and have the conversation maybe later. But I also like this idea of that it's not always about talking it out or having a conversation. There's other ways, like crying. So it's just, I found it a helpful reminder. And the crying thing, I was just thinking about how we're all so different too. So we all have different needs when it comes to this. Like my youngest has learned, I mean, it's been a good couple years and he's 9. He'll say sometimes when he's upset, I just need to cry. And he'll try to make himself cry. But then there's other times where he'll be really upset about something. And he's crying so much that he gets a headache. So he's really figuring out that crying's an option. Crying can feel good, but it also doesn't always feel good. Whereas my eldest is so different and rarely cries. And then I worry about, oh my gosh, we're not crying enough. So that was just a little interesting piece as well.
No, thank you. That's interesting. That's interesting. And just a good reminder of how, yeah, we're all so different. And so our kids are going to be as well. And then you put that mix in of everybody, and it's a lot to think about. Okay, Haley, here, it's bringing it right back home to me, the essence of your website, choosing kindness is our next one. And there's a quote here from Sandra Dodd. It only takes a second to do better. Kindness has many heroic qualities. It can diffuse tension, calm conflict, and be immensely healing. And if we want to be a better parent, kindness is a good place to start. And then you have the word now as its own sentence, which I quite like. In practice, this might look like giving our child a hug, listening to them describe their latest gaming win, or bringing them a snack just because. And if our kindness muscles need a little warming up, breaking out the baby books and recalling family stories can work wonders. And what makes the kindness lark even more amazing? Showing kindness to others helps us feel kinder to ourselves. Yes, I love how you've included this, Haley, because I think, well, it's so much the energy of your whole website. But I love the fact that you've put the word now kind of like as its own sentence, because I think it's like kindness doesn't have to be a lofty thought that we think, okay, when this particular situation passes, I'm going to do this differently. I'm going to do this better next time. We can do that. But the quote here from Sandra, it only takes a second to do better. Kindness can literally be deciding to give a hug in that moment. Even if we don't have the situation figured out, You know, it's just, again, if I go back to the example of being in a difficult moment with your child, if they're open to a hug, I mean, that's a whole other conversation. But if they are, yeah, that's just, that doesn't, we don't have to sit and think about that and analyze how are we going to bring up this conversation. And, but, you know, you can literally just choose to make one small kind of step forward in kindness. And yeah, we can do it in, right in that moment.
I mentioned at the beginning, I think I said, when we're kinder to ourselves, that helps us to be kinder to other people. But I actually think it is a circle, and I don't think we have to start with ourselves, because sometimes that's really hard to be kind to ourselves. And sometimes it is easier to be kinder to other people, because especially if we're, you know, we're feeling like we're a rubbish parent, we kind of don't feel like we deserve that kindness, maybe. But maybe we do feel like our children deserve it. And so it is easier for us to be kinder to our children. And then hopefully that circle will, you know, us being kinder to them then helps us to be kinder to ourselves, if I've got that the right way around. I think it is a circle. Yeah, I think you can start at any point. It doesn't have to be one way or the other. There's not a right way for that circle to start, is there? It doesn't matter where you start. It's a, I almost feel like it's a, it builds momentum in either way round. And I do have another post which I must have written after this one, which I think something like super simple ways to make, to help our children feel loved, something like that. And that mentions things like baby books, because I think actually you wrote a comment on there, Erin, about looking at baby books with your children, I think. And yeah, I have lots of, yes, yeah, super simple practical ways that we can just yeah, hopefully help our children to feel more loved. And there, you know, things on there like bringing them a snack, or which I mentioned here. Yeah. Yeah. There's lots of little things like that. And I think sometimes that can be helpful. It's a practical action that you can take that hopefully makes you feel a little bit better, because you think, oh, well, maybe I did that rubbish, but at least now I'm, you know, I'm showing them that I do love them, and that I'm not this awful person that's always shouting and always horrible, or whatever it is that you've done that's made you feel like a rubbish parent. Yeah.
Well, and I think it's such a good distinction that, as you said, it doesn't necessarily matter where it starts. It's almost the idea maybe of like the words that came to my mind when you were saying it, Haley, is almost like inviting kindness in. Like we don't, it's just like, let's invite a different kind of spirit or vibe into this interaction, and we'll kind of, because not every child is going to want a hug in the moment, so it might be hard to figure out what is that concrete thing that I can do right now. But I think just having that intention of like, okay, let's shift gears and let's kind of bring kindness into this picture, I think it just shifts our demeanor, and it's just a different feeling, isn't it?
I was just, it just reminded me of I was looking through old like memory boxes recently, and I found a this big piece of paper where two of my children were having an argument when they were younger, and one of them said, you know, I need space or whatever, and they went and locked themselves in the bathroom, and the other child wrote them a note and sent it and put it under the bathroom door, and then they ended up having this backwards and forwards, and I kept it, you know, and it was really interesting how it started off quite angry, but it actually got a lot calmer as they were doing it. And I mean, it's a weird thing, isn't it? Because if people need space, then obviously it's really good to respect them and let them have their space. But I guess in this situation, I kind of remember it, and I don't think there was any talking. I think they literally did just put the piece of paper under the bathroom door and let the, I don't know how they got a pen, I don't know how this happened, but maybe it was a bedroom that they were in, I can't remember, but they were just having a conversation, but they were having it on paper. They didn't actually speak to each other. And I think they were there for quite a while, so there was no kind of rushing either. But it just reminded me of that. I'm not really sure why now, but I thought that was quite cute when I saw the piece of paper and remembered that they'd had this this argument, and that's how they'd resolved it.
Yeah. I love that. It reminds me of maybe that pause, even though it probably wasn't like I was talking about, like being conscious about taking a pause, just the time lapse between just the what would have just naturally happened would have given time for that pause.
Yeah. And I think interestingly, there was a bit in it about, I think I had done something, you know, maybe I'd in their mind, I had let one of them get away with something that they shouldn't have got away with. It was kind of something like that. I think I was probably the cause of it all. But they managed to have this nice connecting time together, which was sweet.
Love that.
Yeah, that's such a nice story. This part is really making me think about something. My youngest and I had a conversation not long ago where we had a really rough moment. We both were, you know, volume was up and we were upset, and we were still upset when he said something like, I won't remember exactly what he said, but he voiced that in some way, like we're hurting our relationship and that we're not, you know, I'm not caring about him or something like that while we were still very much in the moment. So kind of nothing like hearing your 9-year-old say that to kind of get you right into the moment. It definitely helped, but yet there was not time to calm down. And I remember starting to offer reassurance right away. And we had had conversations about this before, that even though in our relationships, in our family, there will be arguments, there will be tough moments, there will be hurt done. You know, that's just part of it, within reason, of course. We'll always care about one another. We'll always come back together. We might need to separate for 5 minutes to calm down or something. And I was also offering reassurance that I'm the parent, I'm the mom, I'm the adult, I'm the one who's responsible. It doesn't matter how upset I feel, I won't lose the capacity to take care of you. So, you know, there's a lot in the moment. And I was maybe even worrying about what he said more than I needed to. But I just find that that's, I don't know, like helpful for them to have a safe space to grow up in a family where it's not about never arguing. It's not about it always being quiet and calm and peaceful, because that's not how relationships work. There's going to be tough moments. There's going to be disagreements. But that doesn't mean that we care about each other less, or, you know, love one another and whatnot. So, yeah, I'm starting to ramble now, but it just made me think about how, I hope anyway, it gives them a chance to have those experience with us, to understand that, almost like we don't need to panic when we're having a tough moment with someone, that that is kind of part of being in relationship with others. We're not always going to be on the same page and feel 100% happy with what the other person did, that's, I don't want to use the word normal, but that's okay, that happens. And then, you know, and I always say to them, like, we always come back together, and that's that kindness piece, I think. And so I really like how that can look so many different ways. And you guys have pointed out how, like Erin, you said, like a hug in the moment isn't what they always want, but there's lots of different things that you can do. And for sure, I find for myself, sometimes I'll need not much time. And certainly going back and looking on my phone at like the little pictures of them can really speed up the process of me calming down, and go right in with, I can't think off the top of my head right now, but usually the acts of kindness in those moments, pretty small and simple. And then, you know, often comes with an apology.
Well, and you saying that, Ashley, so I'm going to do something here just as far as, so the next one here is taking care of ourselves. So I want to come back to that, but because I feel like a couple things that you each said, Haley, you mentioned that your name was possibly, you know, involved in this exchange between two of your kids. And then, you know, Ashley, you're talking a little bit about that too, how it can be kind of hard to, maybe hear that it's perceived you're part of the situation. So there's one here, accepting our responsibility. And so I'll read a little bit of it, and then I'll just maybe mention what came to mind. So Taking care of them and taking care of us, those are biggies, no question, all part of our responsibility as parents. And another part of that responsibility is owning up to our mistakes, recognizing when we've messed up and making amends, being honest with our children and generous with our apologies can limit any harm our messing up might cause. Here we go. Okay. And while we're on the subject of being responsible, sure, it's good to fess up when we've made a mistake, but in the interests of being a fully rounded model of humanness, let's take a moment to celebrate when things are going well too. So Haley, you go on to talk about, you know, in practice, this could look like apologizing. I just want to talk about this idea of accepting our responsibility, and we touched on it last time as well. So, yeah, I think, like, I had one parent in particular who I remember apologizing. Not over and over again, but I have a few key memories of being apologized to. And I remember that. I really remember that accountability. And I think that that helps things feel clear to a child when somebody is accountable. And I don't even think it's about, was it exactly this person's fault or was it exactly that? Like, it's not even about that. It's that there is somebody else in the interaction who is willing to even reflect about their part of a conversation or an argument or whatever. And I think that goes so far when kids just see that accountability. I think where I have had to be careful with that is that the apology doesn't go too far into an explanation of why I got into that zone in the first place, which can then end up blaming the child again and kind of take away the power of the apology. So I wanted to say that about the apology, but I also just wanted to say that I think I just wanted to acknowledge the challenge sometimes. You know, I know now that my kids are older, we've had the odd time that they have expressed, you know, question or, you know, maybe talked about a certain way that things went or a certain way that we did things or a certain incident that kind of came about the way that it did. And that's sometimes hard to hear, right? It can be hard to hear as a parent when somebody feels that, you know, sometimes the rubbish parent feeling is because somebody tells us, maybe our own child, that they're not that keen on the way that we did, you know, X, Y, and Z or whatever. And I think it, to me, it's this combination and it's a hard place to sit. You want to validate it and you want to be accountable. And also there are sometimes reasons that we do things in a particular way that we can't even always share with that particular person. So just, or we can, but it might not be understandable to them. So I just think about situations when we maybe have a couple of siblings and like maybe I would short circuit somebody's emotional expression because I knew it was potentially going to overstimulate or set somebody else off is the best example I can give. And so there are times where we're conscious that, you know, this might not be the easiest thing for this sibling, but in the interest of the big picture of how today's going to go, or, you know, I don't know if I'm explaining myself, but as parents, I think we need to give ourselves grace at the same time as validating how things feel for certain children and being accountable that we don't, you know, yeah, maybe we didn't figure that out very well or whatever. So we can be accountable and also, you know, as you said about our humanness, Haley, be realistic about sometimes the limits of what we can figure out in the moment.
Yeah. And I think as well, going back to that example that I was, the story that I was just telling about those two children and their little paper interaction, also it's worth remembering that we don't always have to fix everything. Mm. You know, it's not always, it's not all, you know, sometimes it's it is good to apologize. I agree with what you've said. And I think that's, you know, and I mentioned that in the post. For myself, I know that I have a terrible habit of apologizing for everything, which maybe for my children might make them feel like apologies aren't as, don't mean as much, perhaps, because I say sorry all the time for things, which is a bad habit to get into. And I genuinely mean it when I say it, but maybe for other people, it doesn't feel like that because they know that I, you know, I'm very ready to blame myself, which is, you know, an issue that I need to work on. But I'm just thinking about how if we have faith in our children, and, you know, and we want to cultivate that faith and confidence in our children, then and respecting them, you know, sometimes we can remember that they can come to their own conclusions without us necessarily having to tell them things, and they may well be, you know, between each other, they can resolve things that we don't necessarily have to get involved in. And I just think, I don't know if I'm explaining that very well, but I just think that's another thing, I guess, you know, adding to what you were saying, Erin, about trying to, I guess what we're trying to do is reassure people, aren't we? And reassure ourselves that we don't always have to be the ones to fix things, because often, you know, our children are very capable, and you know, and the more we can remember that, the more I guess we can take the pressure off ourselves. That doesn't mean that we get away with not ever apologizing. I don't mean that at all, but I guess it's just a balancing act between remembering as well that there are some things that, yeah, we don't have to always fix. It doesn't, the onus is not always on us. Obviously we have a different responsibility to our children, and I'm not I don't mean to deny that in any way, but I guess it's not, sometimes, I mean, I think we talked about it before, didn't we? Sometimes things are much bigger in our heads than actually they are in reality. And so that's one example, but I guess there are other examples as well where, yeah, it's not always on us, I guess that's what I'm saying. I hope that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, it kind of illustrates how nuanced everything is, right? Like it's just so much to think about. And I think it just to backtrack to the point you'd had before I jumped ahead to responsibility, this taking care of ourselves was the point you had before. And so in that one, I'll just jump back. It says, it's worth remembering that often our parenting doubts arise because we're feeling disconnected from our children. We can start to feel resentful and fearful from a distance. Sometimes we don't need a break. We need to move in closer, build up some emotional credit in both of our banks. And so I think, like, yeah, sometimes it's not an apology or it's not having the answer. Because the interesting thing about an apology, as much as I appreciated that as a child, when that parent apologized to me, and I think what it did is it clarified, it just made things feel clearer to me. At the same time, it's a shame life wasn't clearer. There's so many contradictions, right? But at the same time, I think apologizing too much, which Haley, I do that as well, it can have the effect of either making it seem like we need to move on. Like if I'm apologizing because I just want the conflict to end. And so if I apologize, we can just move on, right? And so kids can are pretty sensitive to those things, I think, over time. So I think that's one thing that maybe over apologizing can do. But I also wonder if apologizing can kind of feed into the idea that rather than a situation being complex and let's kind of invite kindness in and see if we can move ahead, that we always have to talk about who's wrong, or like we can make it very black and white sometimes. So I think those apologizing moments, I think there's definitely space for somebody to literally knock on somebody's door and say, you know, I reacted quickly and that was unfair and I'm sorry. I think there's a lot of space for that. But I also think, yeah, if we're doing it a lot, which I also have the tendency to do, yeah, it can make it seem like there always needs to be an apology for any sort of life to continue on that day. I don't know. I'm thinking of like go as usual, but
yeah, no,
I like
I'm
it.
finding that
It's complicated, right? It's, yeah.
Well, it's making me think about how I think sometimes as parents, I don't know how this is these days, really. And I'm thinking kind of back to my teaching days when I really started to pay attention to how other teachers would respond to conflict between kids. And I saw a lot of forced apologies happen between kids. And I remember one teacher in particular that I worked with. We even had a little conversation about it afterwards. And she said very clearly to me that she never forces the students, like the kids, to apologize to one another, because she really believed that, you know, if you're going to apologize to someone, you apologize when you're when you genuinely feel sorry and everything. And it was really refreshing at the time to hear someone say that, because I remember being like, yeah, that makes a lot more sense from what I've been seeing. And then of course with my own kids, I think as parents, I mean, it feels good when you see your child apologize, whether it's to a sibling or someone else. But I think there can be too much pressure around that, and we can fall down the path of, you know, encouraging our kids, or maybe in some situations forcing our kids to, you know, especially siblings, they just, I know sometimes my kids get into phases where it seems like they're not getting along more than they are. And it would have to be like apology after apology after apology. And of course, that's just not, I don't know, like I feel like, and I think it is different with siblings too. Like that's such a unique relationship compared to like, you know, my kids with their friends or something. Those are different types of relationships and friendships. But I've really tried to focus on myself in those situations. And when I feel like I've messed up, just genuinely going up and apologizing and not worrying about what the apology script is supposed to sound like. And I know I've thought a lot about, because I know I've read a couple different times, like a good apology is also kind of following up with how you're going to be different the next time. And I understand that. And I know that that can be, you know, really important and helpful at times, but I don't even think that always has to be included, because I think sometimes it's just for myself anyway, apologizing for, yeah, the way I reacted when I got really upset. And I'm not going to apologize and say, that won't ever happen again, because I'm a human being and that probably will happen again. But and I'll feel sorry and I'll feel bad about it. But I think, yeah, I mean, I've kind of brought up a couple different things now. But I'm just thinking about both, and I feel like focusing on myself and how I model apologizing in a genuine, authentic way with my kids when it feels right. For me, that feels more valuable than because I do have conversations with them about how they can make amends with one another at different times, but it's not all the time. It's and I think what I notice when I watch them is it's not needed, those apologies. I hope I'm making sense. I feel like I'm really rambling, but like I'd be telling them constantly to apologize to each other if that's the path we went down, and they just get over things. Like they do move on. And I almost wonder if it was all about always apologizing and saying you're sorry after every little thing. I don't know. That just doesn't seem natural to me. Like, I think sometimes there's just something in certain relationships where there's like an understanding maybe that verbalizing the, you know, saying I'm sorry every time isn't necessary. And I mean, of course, you could get into how there's other ways to show someone that you're sorry as well, but I'll stop because I'm rambling. I don't know if I'm making any sense.
So the sorry thing is so interesting. So I'm thinking of an example at a park where there was an incident where one of my younger kids reacted defensively, physically moved somebody off of them, let's put it that way, and which begs the question why this person was continuously physically on them, right? So it was a situation where I had kind of seen stuff building, and I knew what had happened, and I couldn't really imagine what else he could have done in that moment. And there was a lot of pressure for him to apologize from the other parent, and they kind of set up a dynamic of like almost nothing else was going to be happening until this apology happened. And I'm like, I knew the apology wasn't going to happen. Right. And so, you know, we talked it through, and it was a good moment for me, because I think in years prior to that, I would have been nervously trying to get him to apologize so we could, and I just had kind of had it that day, I think, but I was able to really pretty matter-of-factly say, so I don't think that apology is going to happen. So we kind of need to decide kind of what to do from here. Do we maybe this has come to a natural end today as far as our play. And there was a real like lack of willingness to accept that I couldn't get him to apologize. But the thing is, I actually didn't want him to apologize, because to me, I don't know really what else he could have done. And I do think that we can, so to bring it back to ourselves, I guess, I think if a child is forced to apologize, I imagine that just builds anger and resentment to the situation. And so I think we have to give ourselves grace around that too, like being aware and feeling authentic and just modeling that for our kids. Sometimes we do have a complex situation, and jumping to an apology doesn't necessarily feel authentic. And I think similar to what you're saying, Ashley, it's such an interesting point that certain relationships don't even require an apology, and, or maybe certain situations within certain relationships don't. And I think that can be true at times with our kids and us as well. Haley, you talked about, I can't remember the exact wording, but it was like building up our emotional bank or our, you know, bank of connection. I feel like there's room for missteps here and there. And sometimes an apology would almost at times make things weird. Like we might be feeling badly about things, but we can see that they've moved on, and it just might not be necessary in every situation. Apologies is an interesting topic, apparently.
Oh, definitely. I've definitely been in situations like you said, Erin, definitely. Yeah. I can remember a situation with a family member where they were very adamant that my child should apologize to their child. And I didn't feel it was going to happen. And again, didn't necessarily think it was a good thing, because it was more about their intent, I suppose. And I knew my child was sorry, and they had a very good relationship with the other person. And of course they, you know, and I think that's what I tried to explain at the time was, you know this person, you know that they love you, and of course they'll be sorry if they've hurt your feelings, but they're just not able to say that at this present moment. And I was about to say something which has totally gone out of my mind. Oh, I know. It was about many times we talked about this in the last episode about feeling like a rubbish parent, the idea that often what we do or say to other people is a lot more about us than it is about them is the same for our children, isn't it? So when one of our children gets, and I have had this conversation over and over again with my children, when they get upset about something that one of their siblings has said to them, trying to remind them that it wasn't necessarily about them. You know, maybe it was much more about the other person, and remembering and getting them to remember that, you know, genuinely, do you think so-and-so really wanted to hurt you? You know that they love you, you know that they care about you, and you know that they, you know, that it was, they were tired or they're worried about this thing, or, you know, trying to help them to have that compassion for other people, I think is really powerful, isn't it? Because it does help us as people to remember that a lot of what happens to us is more about the other person than it is about us. So, because it's like when you're driving, I think sometimes, and you can get kind of, or some people can get very hung up on the fact that other people have, you know, they've overtaken them on purpose, or they've cut them up on purpose, or they've done something that they, you know, and then when you stop to think and you think, well, actually, you can reframe that and think, well, they're in a hurry or they're irritated about something. They're not, then they're, you know, they don't even know who's in that car, do they? So they're not really doing it to us on purpose. And I can understand how people feel like that, because it does, you know, because it is annoying when people do things that you think are wrong. And of course, there's a danger element as well, you know, which is another thing. But if we can take that step back and remember that it's not necessarily about us, that can help us to feel a lot better about, you know, better in ourselves, kind of. It can help us to calm down all the adrenaline that's going, you know. And I know I've said to my husband before, you know, I care about you and I care about your blood pressure. So if, you know, I want you to, you know, I don't want you to get yourself in a state because this person's done something. You know what I mean? You kind of, am I explaining that? Yeah, it's.
Yeah. No, we can end up writing a whole tale about the Yeah, the highway example is a funny one, Haley, because that happened to me the other day when my daughter and I were driving, and I was quite irritated about, and I got into a whole slew of what this person was like, and they were the type of person that did this and that, and my daughter said, "Wow, you've really got them figured out." And I said, "Oh, I'm just frustrated with the drivers out here today," or whatever. But yeah, we can go really far into and our kids can as well. So it just such a good reminder of how complex these things are, and often a child that's maybe, and then I guess we could say this about our interaction with our kids too, something happens, it seems dramatic, but often there's been all these other little pieces that have led up to it. So I think that thinking it through carefully, some of the things we're talking about here, and taking that pause, so much more complicated than we think. So
I think we can all remember
that we're talking so much about this, because man, these things are intricate, right?
And I think we can all remember times where we've snapped at somebody else, haven't we? And that's really not what they did was not really significant, or not, it didn't really get to us as much as it appeared it got to us. It's just that we'd had a really bad day, hadn't we, or we were tired or whatever, and it just, that I think you mentioned it earlier, Erin, about it being the last straw almost. So those things are good to remember, aren't they?
Yeah, it's making me think about how we say and we know and we believe that people do well when they can. So it's kind of coming back to that idea and spending almost like, yes, there's a place and time for apologies, and apologies are so valuable. But there's, you know, sometimes like what you were saying, maybe Erin, like it can feel like a quick fix. I think especially when it comes from adults and children, adults kind of pushing, like, well, apologize, just like, especially in those moments, right? Like we can't move on until there's an apology. So isn't it so much more valuable to take that pause and think about, like what you said, there's little things that led up to this, because really we do know, or we choose to believe that people, kids, adults do well when they can. And so obviously whatever it was that they did that, you know, you think an apology is needed. Sure. Sometimes there is, and it can be helpful, but there's probably a lot more value in thinking about, what was going on for that person. And compassion, that's the other word that's coming up for me right now too. And like what you said, Haley, we know we've done that to people, and we have hopefully self-compassion to forgive ourselves for snapping in the moment because we know we were struggling. And of course we hope other people, can have compassion for us. And that's obviously easier to do with people that we're in relationship with and that we know, than, you know, yes, someone on the highway or something, but we can still do that in those moments too, that it's not about us. It's about them, and they probably wouldn't have done that if they were having a better day. So, yeah.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I just love these things because they're such good reminders, not just of our relationships with our kids, but, you know, in general, they're just such good ways of thinking about, I'm thinking back to the moment I was casting all those ideas on that other driver, but they're good life reminders. So often the parenting stuff just transfers really well to everything. So we have a few more here, and we'll see which, some of them we may have tapped into already, but we'll see where we're at. So the next one is getting support. Just as we're safe spaces for our children, so we need our own safe spaces, a partner, friend, or family member we can turn to listen to our worries, to offer some words of wisdom when we're looking for them, That's a good point right there when we're looking for them. A source of emotional and practical support when we need it. And that doesn't have to be just one person or even a person at all. Sometimes we'll find the support we're looking for in a book or a YouTube video or a blog post. And not forgetting our children, of course, not in a make them do chores or burden them with all our worries type of way, but our children can be the most amazing resource for support in looking after each other and our homes, and in offering valuable feedback on our parenting too, as we've talked about here and there. After all, who knows more about what they need from us? Okay, a couple thoughts already, but I'll just quickly talk about. So it's in practice, this might look like reaching out to friends and family for help, finding supportive sources of inspiration online and off, joining parenting and home ed groups, and listening to our children when we're having doubts and when we're not. So I just wanted, the thing that popped out to me was the idea of having somebody to talk to and them giving perspective if we're looking for it, because I think that can be really difficult. And I find if I'm having something that I would like to work through or talk through, I'm thoughtful about who I bring that information to or talk to about it, because for some people, they're fixers. And so they want to give you the solution. And sometimes you want a solution and that's the person to talk to. But there are other times that I think we just need to talk about how hard things are, or we just need to talk about a situation in a way that they're not necessarily offering us a solution. Like we don't always need one in the moment. Sometimes we just need to kind of get things off our chest. And also maybe there's a difference in people around levels of judgment. You know, sometimes we can share things about our interactions with our kids and feel like it really is just an opportunity to move those thoughts and feelings through. But, you know, maybe there's other people that might kind of judge our child or judge our parenting, and that's not going to feel supportive. No, we all have friends that we have a connection with enough that they can bring us gently to a point of accountability. I think that's a bit different, but yeah, I would just say for myself, I need different things at different times. So being thoughtful about who am I bringing my thoughts to.
Yeah, I was thinking about how exactly what you just said, Erin. I think like, and I don't know, I've been thinking about this maybe a bit more proactively, like things have kind of shifted for me. So I've been thinking about, and I think this will continue to happen as the kids get older, and wanting to like sometimes talk about people who know my kids, but sometimes wanting to talk about situations with people who don't know my kids, that also can feel a bit safer, I guess. And then it makes me think about like the virtual kitchen table community, and how I think it'd be similar for what, like if I read a book or a blog post, and that being a sense of support, there's no judgment. I guess you can feel judgment, but for me, that's been helpful. And same with like the online community, and I'm hoping to tap into that a bit more. I just need to kind of form my thoughts in my head and then jump online and kind of, you know, not necessarily share. I mean, maybe I could get into it, but not necessarily share specific situations, but just kind of like overarching themes that I've been noticing, and kind of like, I'm going to say the word struggling. That seems a bit harsh, but just wanting to hear other people's thoughts, you know, whether they've had similar experiences or they've been thinking similar ideas. Just like what you were saying, not necessarily asking for advice or possible solutions, but just wanting to have a conversation about certain things that I'll say like we deal with as parents. And I think, of course, sometimes it's super helpful when I can go like talk to my sisters, and my sisters know my kids. But there's other things that I'm so grateful to have spaces like the online community, or even different people that I've met online, but they don't know my kids personally. And it just feels, I don't know, it provides a little bit more comfort, because there's that distance or separation between them and the kids. I hope, I think other people understand what I mean when I say that. But that's what came up for me. And like in this section of getting support of the post, that's been really valuable. And I used to tap into it when they were younger in like attachment parenting Facebook groups. And again, they didn't know, and they didn't even know me really. whereas like in the online community, I feel known, but the kids less so. So that's kind of what came up for me as like a really helpful support.
Well, and I think the other thing about knowing somebody online, and we kind of touched on this, I think, when we were talking about like online connections or community, you're not part of each other's daily lives. That can even if it's not an online connection, like I have a couple of friends who, I mean, their kids are completely different age to mine and they live maybe an hour and a half away. Like even meeting them somewhere and having a conversation, excuse me, can have the same effect. We're not in each other's daily lives. It's not like our kids are both on the same sports team. And so if I had a frustration about the coach or something like that, I can freely talk about that without it being uncomfortable for the other person. Or there's a different safety to it, because you're also not, the other person isn't in a position where, you know, there's a common dynamic that they have to work through. There's just this freedom to really talk about your situation. I think it's really interesting to look at how different types of people in our lives can fill different needs that way. But when you were talking about your sisters, like, yeah, we might also have family members who get us in a different way and know our family history or our neighborhood or something like that. And that can be helpful in a completely different way. Okay. I lost my screen there for a minute. Okay, hold on. So the next one is exploring our values. At the start of his book, Unconditional Parenting, Alfie Kahn invites us to imagine we overhear other parents talking about our child. This kind of feels scary to me now. I'm like interested in what he has to say. Pause for a moment to think of a word or sentence that you would be especially delighted to hear. My guess and my hope is that it wouldn't be, "Boy, that child does everything he's told and you never hear a peep out of him." The crucial question, therefore, is whether we sometimes act as if this is what we care about most. So, Haley, you go on to say, this can be a powerful exercise to help us uncover what matters to us most. Exploring our values and defining our priorities can profoundly impact our parenting practices. Taking time out of our already busy schedule to consider the bigger picture might seem too much. Yet if we can, we might find daily decision-making becomes easier. Clear on our priorities, we're more confident in the choices we make, stronger in the face of criticism, and less prone to be shaken by the selected snippets of someone else's life we might see on social media. I think that's such an interesting point in that quote. The crucial question, therefore, is whether we sometimes act as though this is what we care about most. It's kind of like when people are anxious for their child to start talking, but then when the child starts talking, it's a lot. It's a lot of questions and a lot of opinions and a lot of, so it's like we want two things at the same time, right? We want kids who are curious, who can speak up for themselves, who can establish like healthy boundaries, but we don't always want those things when it's not convenient for us. So I think that was a really apt quote there, Haley. And Alfie has lots of good stuff, lots of good thoughts and material, doesn't he? Any thoughts on that one? The heading of that.
Well, I was just thinking.
Sorry. I was just going to jog back. The heading of that is exploring our values. You know what? Let me just, I might have gotten kind of so into the quote. There's another piece down here, Haley. I just want to add, in practice, this might look like drawing up our own parenting philosophy. And then in parentheses, you have sounds grander than it has to be. Many home educators are familiar with the idea of an educational philosophy. And for many of us, this is also our parenting philosophy. So yeah, I just wanted to jog back to the idea that the heading is like exploring our values.
Yeah, and I think the thing I was going to say was it is easy. Sometimes the kinds of what's the word, attributes, personality traits, I'm not sure, the things that we value in adults, sometimes we don't value those in children, or at least it can make our life more difficult if our children have those things in childhood, but we kind of want them to have them in adulthood. So, you know, thinking about things like you want them to be able to stand up for themselves, and you want them to be able to say no, and you want them to have their own ideas about things, and you want them and sometimes those things can manifest as a child in saying no when you're trying to get out of the door and that, you know, and it can make your daily life more difficult. And I totally understand that, because I feel that myself very much so. But sometimes it's good when we do allow ourselves to step back and think about how those traits that we sometimes don't value in children will actually stand them in really good stead as an adult. But it does make our day-to-day life, can make our day-to-day life a little bit more complicated. But I guess that can be, sometimes that can help us to be able to cope with those things a bit better if we remind ourselves of that we want them to be that sort of a person that will question if things don't feel right to them. If they feel uncomfortable about things, they'll speak up. And what a better place for them to practice. And in fact, they won't, you know, they perhaps won't be able to do those things if they hadn't practiced them in the safe space that we're able to give them. And so all those times where we're, you know, having to deal with somebody's upset that there's injustice or whatever, those things are really valuable practice, very, really valuable practice, aren't they, for them as they get older, to be able to have, I guess, respectful conflict with other people in the outside world, and to be able to make their needs known when they need to be able to say no to somebody when things do feel uncomfortable, those kinds of things.
Yeah, I've often heard you talk about that, Haley, this idea. I think it came up even when we've been talking about technology or screens, and this idea that of our time with our kids, like the home being the practice ground for all those things that they're going to need to be able to self-direct themselves with and find their own footing with. And that this is this opportunity with safe people for them to try all of that out.
Yeah, it makes me think about how, on top of it being inconvenient at times for us as the parents, like in the home, I think about how it can feel, I guess maybe still inconvenient, but also really uncomfortable when they are doing these things in front of other people outside of the home. I find that really hard because of the type of person I am. And I don't mean to say that, I mean, I often see my kids do something and in the moment I'm like, oh my gosh, I could never, but I'm really proud of them afterwards. But it's so uncomfortable for me in the moment because I, you know, unfortunately, am the people pleaser. And I say unfortunately because I wish I was as brave and bold as the kids are and as comfortable as they are when they do, you know, say no or stand up for themselves or really push for their ideas. But it can, there's that extra pressure when there's the other eyes, or if you feel like you're maybe with other people who don't feel the same way as you do with, you know, the way the kids are, in those moments, that can be really uncomfortable. That's been something that I've really had to continue to work through. And especially as the kids get older, actually, because I feel like the expectations just continue to go up. Well, shouldn't they learn not to speak that way or behave that way by now? You know, stuff like that. I had another thought. Oh, I was going to say also with what you were saying about the value of them having the opportunity to practice this stuff growing up in safe spaces and with safe people. I think what comes to mind and what is also true with that is they are young, they are figuring out how to do those things and how to have, you know, how to converse with people, how to disagree with people, how to express their ideas in certain ways that they're better received or whatnot it is. Like they're figuring that out. We're giving them the time to practice. And what I think should go along with that is recognizing and allowing space for and accepting that they're not going to do it perfectly. Like they're going to be trying their best in the moment and they're going to mess up along the way. I mean, as we do too, it's not like we become adults and we've got it figured out and we do it perfectly. I mean, that's not the end goal, I guess. But just to say that, you know, when a 5-year-old, a 7-year-old, a 12-year-old, a 14-year-old, you know, are in a certain situation and they do have eyes on them, because often young people, there's a lot of supervision too. Like there's adults don't often have that. Whereas young people they have those, you know, judging eyes on them. So that adds another whole element. They're not good, you know, they're not going to necessarily do it in the best way every time, but that's part of learning and practicing those things. So yeah, I was just thinking about those moments outside of the home when they're doing those things and practicing those, what do we want to call it? Just ways of interacting, I guess, with other people and not like letting go of themselves completely, right? Mm-hmm. It's going to look lots of certain ways. I just feel like our society, I don't know, there's still a lot of expectations on the way children are, and there's not a lot of space for that. But I know I'm also saying that from a person, like I'm very uncomfortable in those moments. Like I'm the type of person who's like, let's just smooth everything over and everybody feels comfortable and okay. But that's not what I really want. That's just what makes me most comfortable.
Well, and I'm thinking too, yeah, so there's the expectation on kids often in public spaces. But I was thinking, I'm thinking now of something that happened just a couple of nights and evenings ago. There's also a lot of expectation on parents in public. Sometimes even when the children, like I'm thinking of a couple parents I saw in there's like a play area of a children's library. And the kids were like, there was nothing gone awry by any kind of anybody's scale of, or measure of what that could look like. So there were a few kids just playing together. And I wonder too, if there's almost like, as parents, we feel watched. So there was a dad there, and the number of times, and he was so well-meaning, but I'm thinking if they were home, this wouldn't be happening. I think he wanted to show he was like on top of things. So it was a lot of stuff. Like they would kind of run around the corner. Okay. You know, be kind, make sure you're sharing, but the children weren't showing any signs of not sharing. Right. So it was just almost like people equate parenting with keeping kids under control and reminding, and it was all very kindly said, but it was constant, right? So the kids were playing. It was like, make sure you're sharing, be kind, put the boxes away. Okay, make sure you put, and even as they were putting the boxes away, it's almost like he's talking about how they're putting the boxes away. And I do know that feeling, because yeah, we are being watched. You know, the librarians are watching, other parents are watching. And so there's all these little pieces, right? Like putting the particular books back on the shelf or not, if the library wants you to put them on the cart. Like there's all these different sort of like little pieces. And I do feel like we have this sense of like an external, you know, what are other people thinking? Or if parents are taking a moment to themselves, like this is something else I think about. Sometimes when kids are playing and a parent may be reading a book themselves, or they might be on their phone, and you can tell they feel kind of, and I'm just like, I don't feel any judgment about that, because I think, why do they need to be constantly interacting with their child? They don't. They might just be taking time to read an article on their phone, or maybe they're scrolling, and that's okay. So I think about like, yeah, the kids are being watched, the parents are being watched. And so in an effort not to kind of look like a, you know, quote, rubbish parent, is our parenting actually not even as good as it would be at home, where you're actually giving kids space to play and to be themselves, right? But I get it. I understood why he was doing that, but it just kind of stood out to me. Mm-hmm. Okay, so that kind of leads us into our last couple, and this is kind of a good segue. So the next one is being guided by our child. This isn't about becoming the perfect parent. Getting too attached to our vision of what a good parent looks like can trip us up. Parenting philosophies and mission statements are all well and good, but if we don't prepare these with the needs of our children at their heart, it's a bit like creating a healthy menu plan without checking the fridge. Looks good, but isn't much use. And of course, the needs of our children change. Creating strong connections and open communication with our children is crucial to understanding those needs and helping us evolve as the parents our children need and want. When we're strongly attached to our convictions, it can be hard to consider alternative viewpoints, yet maybe that's when it can benefit us the most. Keeping an open mind and being willing to question our assumptions and be flexible in our thinking can lead to more harmony and happiness in our homes and in our hearts. And I guess I just want to kind of double back to that idea of parenting philosophy that I talked about with unschooling or attachment parenting, where I think we can almost develop an identity sometimes. And then when something that we've developed an identity around, like maybe our child, I don't know, like let's say attachment parenting, maybe our child self-weans before, you know, we've done all this reading about breastfeeding and attachment parenting and our child kind of just wants to do their own thing. Or maybe they want to go to school after we've put all this time into home educating philosophy, or maybe they are really interested in having a curriculum where they know what they're doing each day. And so if we are so tied up in our own mission statement, we can lose the plot of what our kids actually need. Anything else on that one?
I was just going to say that I feel like I didn't wrap up my point last time about how you know, having that extra pressure from everybody else watching, kind of outside of the home with how our kids are, that it's the constantly for me coming back to what my values are and spending time, or enough time thinking about my values. And similar to this point, being guided by our child, how do I explain what I'm thinking here? It's an ongoing process, I guess, because our children's needs are always changing as they grow, I think is what I want to say. So it's the practice, I suppose, or maybe the habit of coming back to those things and taking the time to, change things as needed, or rethink things and reconsider things, and kind of like check in with ourselves and check in with the family to see, like, does this all still make sense for where we're at? And it's easy. And I'm not saying that that's challenging to do. I think for myself is that almost like too much time can go by and I've kind of got stuck in old ideas or where I landed before that's not serving us so much anymore. And I just need to try to not let so much time go by. And, you know, the kids, like, it happens so fast because life is so busy, right? So that's the value of slowing down, is that then, but you still have to remember, I guess. And that's my thing is like, oh, you know what? Why am I still thinking that way? That doesn't make sense anymore. And I guess life kind of just, well, our kids give us those reminders that something's not working anymore. So I find coming back to the values, coming back to, philosophy, whatever you want to call it, is an ongoing practice because, I mean, for the most part, right? Like, mm-hmm. I think mm-hmm. that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. And I have something to say about that. But let me read the last point, and then I think I can actually tie it in. So the last one here is making a plan. Now we know what's at the heart of our worries, and we know where we want to go. We can make a plan for what to do next. In practice, this might look like getting back to our children and enjoying them. And if they're busy elsewhere, consider strewing or setting out an invitation to play for them to discover later, and a plan for how to tackle our doubts in the future. So the plan thing is interesting because it really does, you know, Haley, you talk here about getting back to our children and enjoying them. And if they're busy elsewhere, you know, what we can do and how to consider things. And it makes me think about how, We can, the plan almost has to be to stay flexible and connected, right? It's because Ashley, as you were talking there, it's like, I think many of the moments where I have felt the most incompetent or insecure is when I think I've got something and I've really leaned into a certain stage or interest my child is in. And it is just astounding to me how suddenly they can move out of things. So I'll build a coping mechanism, or I'll educate myself about something with my child, and then it's gone. And they might even go in the opposite direction. And it's like, okay. So again, I think we're back to that being gentle with ourselves, because what we're being asked to do is consistently lean in with our children, but then also be ready to let go when they've moved on. So we think about something like developing a vision or a philosophy. I completely understand the value of it. And at the same time, we have to hold it so carefully, or we miss the whole point.
That's almost a metaphor for their kind of, for the life cycle of parenting as well, isn't it? In terms of, we need to be there for them and let them lean into us. But also we need to recognize as they get older that we need to be able to step back and let them explore what it means to be their own person, but also with the fact that we can then lean back in again when they need it, type thing, that they don't have to, you know, they don't come to a certain age and we're like, that's it, done, you know, we've got no role anymore. That's not what, you know, that's not our experience of having adult children, is it? That's, you know, for most of us, that's really not what happens. But it is that balancing act, isn't it, between being there as much as they need you to be, but also being able to step back and recognizing that it's their life. And like I said earlier, about having that faith and confidence in them, and knowing that, trusting them, and knowing that they are capable beings, and that you know, for all the experiences they've had, they've built up lots of skills and resilience, and not that they know everything, because we don't either, you know, none of us do, but that we can have, you know, we can have faith in ourselves and we can have faith in them, and that can really help to reduce the level of anxiety and worry we have, I guess, about, you know, because there can be a lot of anxiety and worry about being a parent. But the more we can have faith in ourselves and faith in them, that the more hopefully we can reduce that anxiety and worry, and yeah. Wow. Just as you were talking, Erin, it just seemed like, oh, this is just about parenting as a whole thing.
Yeah, and it makes me think about, like, how much do we think of parenting as a relationship versus a job? Like, you know, when you're saying it, just kind of goes on, doesn't it? And it's not. I remember sitting with a group of maybe three or four other moms. Our kids were relatively young. And I remember the one mom, she just flat out said, you know, I think her oldest was five and a half maybe. And she said, you know, I've just poured everything in, and my goal, you know, their main personality is formed by five and a half. And of course I'm going to be around, but I feel like I've done the bulk of the work. Actually, I had a child that was maybe 2 or 3 years older than hers. And I remember thinking, 8 and a half still feels pretty complicated. And I get it. You know, you have these psychological stages that have been, you know, various theorists have divided our development up into, but, yeah, I think that openness should just be in relationship rather than feeling like we've checked the boxes of our parenting tasks. And I think too, you know, so much of this, yeah, it is about relationship and parenthood, but so much of it, in order to have that, is about our relationship to ourselves and our ability to let our kids be them and us be us, and come in when that connection is necessary, but also move back when it's not. So anything else popping up?
I feel feel like we covered so much.
We sure did.
Yeah, I'm glad we have this episode, and then the previous episode we talked about feeling like a rubbish parent too, because I will be going back to them. I've already used your blog posts, Haley, so many times. I've gone back and read those, and now to have these conversations to go back to, I think will be really helpful. Just this last little bit has me thinking, like, well, like, wow, like, whatever you want to call it, but like parenting is such a, you know, whether you, yeah, job, or I'm kind of thinking like the role of parenting is so big. But I think like lots of times we feel like a rubbish parent because we care so much about all the things we've talked about. So I think it's a really relatable topic because we're all just, we've taken on a really big thing when it comes to having kids. And so it's very, yeah, we all have times where we feel like a rubbish parent, but there's things we can do about that. So really glad to have the conversation.
Yeah. All right. Thank you both. So good to see you both today. And I always feel like we get carried away and forget this at the end, but please, if anybody feels called to leave a review or pass on these episodes to anybody, that would be so helpful and would hopefully be appreciated by that person and definitely by us. And yeah, lots of links to put in the resources today. So thank you both. Bye-bye.
Yeah, thank you everyone for listening. Yeah.
We'll yes, thanks so much.
See you soon.
And this ends our conversation today. We hope you found it interesting and helpful. If you'd like to connect further or see additional content, Erin can be found on the web and on Instagram at Everlearning. Ashley can be found on Instagram at Ashley as Mama and Storytime Shells. And I, Hayley, can be found on the web and on Instagram at Taking a Kinder Path. We'd love it if you'd share this conversation with anyone you think might like it. And if you've enjoyed this episode, maybe you'd consider leaving us a review. We'd love to hear your thoughts. We're so grateful you made time in your day to listen to us chat. Thanks so much for listening.